right now, because the big story of the week, and we'll still be just hyper focusing on this one for the rest of the episode. And I think I have something else I'll talk about if I can get to it. But yeah, big story. Last week we talked about Israel bombing the Iranian embassy, specifically the consulate in Damascus, which is in Syria. Everybody knew that Iran had to respond. Everybody knew it. Everybody knew it. Everybody who was rational and everyone who was sane. Some people think that Israel is allowed to attack whoever and whatever they want, and that no one who gets attacked by Israel should ever respond and ever attack Israel back. A really childish worldview. But we live in an era of people with childish worldviews. There was that famous quip from a Britishman, I forget who it was, in World War II, where they were talking about Hitler, and he entered this war under the childish assumption that he was going to bomb everyone else, and that no one was going to bomb him. That's literally Israel. That's literally Israel. They and their simps operate under the childish assumption that Israel and the United States can bomb anybody that they want, whenever they want, wherever they want, and that no one will bomb them. Now, granted, you have to go really far out of your fucking way to bomb the United States, but thankfully, we have thousands of American troops right at your doorstep that you can bomb instead. So have a feast. You know, we're gonna back up Israel and everything that it does, and then share in the consequences of their stupid actions, you know? Because why wouldn't we want to share in their suffering when we could, I don't know, not? But alas, everybody knew Iran had to respond to this attack on their consulate, their embassy. They had to respond. It's not a matter of wanting to or not. It's a matter of the precedent. It's a matter of the principle. You can't just attack our embassy and get away with it. It's the principle that they had to respond. Because if they didn't, that would mean that every embassy that they have that is in not necessarily friendly places around the world, that's just free eats. Oh, the Iranians, they're not going to defend their embassy. Well, we can do whatever we want. That's a terrible precedent to set. We would never let that happen to our embassy. The Israelis wouldn't let it happen to their embassies. But for some reason, the Iranians are expected to let it happen to theirs. And there's a really strong double speak and a really strong hypocrisy when it comes to Iran. Because what a lot of these Israel simps don't realize when they talk about how Israel has to respond and establish deterrence, they don't realize that everything that they say applies both ways, and that Iran also has a right to exist. Iran also has a right to its own sovereignty, and Iran also has a right to retaliate and respond when they are attacked. All these arguments you heard from the Israel simps about how they have the right to respond, they have the right to do this, that, and the third, because Hamas, the savage barbarians, they attacked and they killed all these people. Well, that goes both ways, but they don't think about that. They do not think about that. They don't want to think about that. Their job is to simp for Israel. Their job is to give them money and never get laid. But yeah, it goes both ways. Iran had to respond. Now, Iran eventually did respond. I mean, they took a moment, right? They took a moment to sort of gather their bearings. They put their forces on high alert. Soldiers in the Revolutionary Guard were put on temporarily banned from taking leave, right? They were essentially locked into the force, and they closed the airspace over Tehran, which is the capital of Iran. And for a good minute, there was a lot of speculation over when they would attack and how they would do it. How big would the response be? Would it be conventional military, or would it be asymmetrical? Because Iran usually doesn't, they usually don't do the tit for tat militarily. They really like their asymmetrical warfare. Whenever they have the chance, they like to use the asymmetrical responses. And you know it was them, but you can't. Oh, they, it's an active war. You can't really do it. That's how they like to usually operate. But this time, they chose the conventional approach. But just going back to the confusion that was present in the air for over the course of the weekend, there were a lot of questions being asked about what Iran's response would look like. The U.S. government was they were threatening war with Iran if they attacked Israel. It's like, and there is the hypocrisy, which has been put on full display, especially since the attack happened itself. But it's like, Israel attacks our embassy, and we're threatening Iran. Israel attacks an embassy. Right? This is the no-go zone. If there was ever a no-go zone, it is the embassy of another nation. Well, that and, you know, that and refugee camps. But when, I mean, what? You, how are you supposed to be able to tell those refugee camps from Hamas campsites? I mean, come on now. How did we really know that that embassy was an Iranian embassy? How do we know it wasn't a Hamas embassy? It's like, you know, I'm being a little bit facetious here, but there are no-go zones. Like, you can violate a humanitarian aid mission. You can bomb a humanitarian aid convoy. You can bomb a refugee camp. You can bomb it over and over and over again. You can bomb hospitals. What you can't do is bomb an embassy, because now you're getting another nation involved in your conflict, right? Directly. That embassy, the land that embassy is on, is legally the land of whoever the embassy is for. You bombed Iran when you bombed their embassy. That's how it works. Iran had to respond, but yet Israel bombs an embassy, and we're coming out simping for them, saying, hey, don't you respond, Iran, Biden. Oh, Bob, Mr. Biden, what are you going to do if Iran? What message do you have to say? What do you have to say about Iran attacking Israel?
Don't.
it's stupid. It's stupid. It's like you're out with your girl, and she goes and slaps someone across the fucking face, and then splashes her drink all over that person. Now, that person has every right to knock her the fuck out. But you're sitting there like, don't you do it. Don't you respond. Hey, come on, don't you do it. Now, granted, you should protect your female, you should protect your significant other. But your significant other shouldn't put you in situations like that. And that's the other half of this equation. Israel puts us in these types of situations. The appropriate response is not to sit there and go, don't you do it, don't you respond. No, it's to grab that bitch and walk away from the situation. De-escalate. We're not doing anything of the sort. We're just sitting there going, yeah, don't you do it. Don't you do it, please. Don't do it. It's so unserious. It's so unserious that it's almost embarrassing if I didn't expect it out of these people. But yeah, we knew Iran had to respond. We knew the United States was going to simp for Israel. We knew Israel was going to be shocked at the very concept of having accountability for their actions. But it really doesn't help that Biden went and gave another blank check to Israel. But another thing that I'll observe before we get into what happened with the attack, the Iranian response, because in that moment, there was a lot of confusion, but at the same time, oddly enough, there was a lot of clarity as well. Like, in that moment, just for a moment, I think a lot of people's eyes were opened to just how many options were available to Iran if it wanted to go to war with Israel. Cyber attacks, missile attacks, drone strikes, ballistic missile attacks. Oh, they could flatten this city here or there. They could get all their militias, all their proxies to launch coordinated assault. They could do this, they could do that. For a very brief moment, there was some clarity about just how strong Iran is and the things that Iran could do if it wanted to. Although not enough clarity to realize that they don't want to do that. In most circumstances. But there was In the middle of that confusion, in the middle of that storm, in the eye of that storm was some clarity. It didn't last very long, right? It didn't last very long, but I did notice it, right? And maybe you noticed it as well. But yeah, a bit of clarity in the midst of all that confusion. But now the attack has happened. Iran has responded. Right after the underestimation of Iran, that sort of veneer of they're too inferior to really do anything, right as that, you know, slipped, that mask we put on slipped for just a moment, and we saw what the Iranians were capable of, the Iranians responded. They fired a very large contingent of drone and cruise missile strikes towards Israel. I say cruise missiles. There were a handful of cruise missiles. It was mostly drones and rockets fired towards Israel. Now, the numbers range from over 100 to around 300. We'll just run with 300. You know, that seems like an appropriate number, right? I would go with a lower number if I wasn't convinced, and you know I would. But I think 300 is a good number to work with, so I'll believe that one. The Iranians haven't contradicted it either. Granted, not that they would, but it's the high end of the spectrum, 300. But I think now, because I was sort of reserving my judgment in the heat of the moment, now I think we can probably safely say that 300 drones and rockets and missiles were fired at Israel. That seems like an appropriate response for a bombing of your embassy. And yeah, most of the drones and the missiles were intercepted. So that we'll just get that out of the way right at the start. Most of the drones and missiles were intercepted. U.S. CENTCOM, the Central Command, they claim to have helped Israel shoot down at least 80 of these rockets and drones. At least 80 drones and 6 missiles. That was the number that I got at the time that I was looking for numbers on how many of these rockets went through. So there was U.S. assistance here in the shooting down of these rockets that were going into Israel. And you could see the videos of the Iron Dome. It's actually really impressive watching. I'll give them that. It's really impressive and satisfying to watch the Iron Dome at work. Granted, for every missile that you don't hit, that's a rocket that... Someone's going to have a really bad day for every one of those rockets that you miss. Now, Israel shot down about 99% of these. I think only a handful, like I'm talking single digits. I think only like single digits actually made it to the ground in Israel and hit targets. And one of the targets, I have it. Where is it? Because it hit one base. The Nevatim base in Israel was one of the places that the Iranian missiles actually reached. So 99%+ of this was shot down, which is good. Well, we don't want anyone to die here. And the Iranians, I don't think the Iranians really wanted anyone to die. And I'll talk about that. But yeah, big attack on paper, all of it shot down. Only a handful actually reached their targets. So that happened, right? That happened. And one of the biggest consequences, if we're looking at this purely from a cost benefit ratio, one of the biggest consequences that I sort of picked up on right away was the fact that this is another chip. This is a chunk taken off of Israel's air defense systems. Because remember, 50 rockets were just fired from Hezbollah earlier this week. Now you're talking 300 drones and missiles fired from Iran. Now, 80 of those were, you know, about a third of the rockets were... The Israelis had U.S. assistance in shooting them down. But that's still 200, or at a bare minimum, 150 rockets that they have to shoot down on their own, right? That means 150 Iron Dome missiles that are no longer available in the event of an attack. And the Iranians just threw 300 at you as a slap on the wrist for attacking their embassy. Right. And that's another thing. Another thing. Iran didn't actually want to do any damage. And that's sort of what I would deem it self-evident by how slow and easy to intercept these rockets were. I mean, sure, you can overwhelm and oversaturate the Iron Dome, but 300 rockets and missiles over the course of a 5-hour long attack, that's not oversaturation of an air defense system. Unless you do that, you have 300 missiles coming in for 5 hours, you know, and then you do that for the next 5 hours, and then the next 5 hours, and then the next 5 hours. You know, if you were to do it like that, that would be a longer term oversaturation. But if you really wanted to oversaturate the air defenses, you'd have sent these 300 drones and missiles and compressed it into the space of like an hour, right? Or even 30 minutes if you could manage to fire that many all at once. That would oversaturate the air defenses. That would overwhelm them. That would allow you to take them out with these drones and rockets. If Iran wanted to do that, they could have. And they would probably still have a lot of rockets left over to just bomb other military installations in Israel. Because I don't think that they would go out of their way to bomb civilians. Granted, when you're dealing with dummy rockets like this, it's really easy to hit an apartment building. So, but that didn't happen. Again, because they fired 300. 300 got shot down. Thank goodness. But Iran wasn't trying to deal any serious damage. But in light of this, in light of that, there's been this strange attempt to sort of paint Iran as the one escalating the entire... And I sort of alluded to this earlier when I talked about this, the childish assumption that Israel's going to bomb everybody and no one's allowed to bomb them. There's this strange attempt to paint Iran as the one escalating here when, how dare they fire these rockets at Israel? Oh my God, the Israelis need to respond, which just ignores the fact that the one... The idea that the Iranians are the ones escalating here, when the entire reason that they carried out this attack was because Israel bombed their embassy in Damascus, is incredible to me. And I mean that literally. It's incredible. I can't fucking believe it. But Iran gets attacked. Iran responds in the most light-handed, telegraphed, an easy to handle way. But Iran is the problem. Iran needs to be retaliated against. Israel needs to assert their deterrence over Iran when they were the ones who started the problem. It's childish. It is childish. It is the epitome of childish. And we shouldn't give it any more legitimacy than that. It is childish, and it is warmonger-ish. It is hawkish. To say that Israel needs to respond, that's the worst thing they could do. It's also baffling watching all these supposedly pro-Israel, oh, I love Israel so much, no one's more pro-Israel, you know, all the Israel simps and the people who pay lip service to the Israel simps, who'll say, no one's more pro-Israel than me. Oh, I'm so pro-Israel, you know, all this talk about being pro-Israel. And this is why I titled that episode early on in October. This is why I titled that episode, Israel and All Her Fake Friends, right? Because all this, I love Israel. I just want Israel to do something that is objectively bad for it to do. I love Israel so much that I want it to commit national suicide. That's what these people say. That's what these people are saying. When you look at the consequences of what these people are advocating for, you realize that they're advocating for the self-destruction of Israel. It's mind-blowing. But that's what they do. And that's why I titled that episode, Israel and All Her Fake friends. If they had half an ounce of sense, they would realize that going along with these ideas, not that they're necessarily influenced by commentators in the United States, but it's not the commentators, it's people in positions of power who are espousing these same stupid ideas. Israel has a lot of fake friends, right? And I am no Israel simp. I do not give a goddamn about Israel. But it's astonishing to see that my position, which is a total apathy towards them, that says the United States shouldn't be in their war, good luck, all right? We're just not going to be over there. To think that that position has managed to become more pro-Israel than what the Israel simps are churning out from their mouths is incredible to me. It is isn't it? Isn't that incredible? Like, they're talking about starting a chain of escalation with Iran, right? It's like Israel attacks Iran. They ignore that, and they want to hyper-focus on Iran bombing Israel back, but they haven't even actually bombed Israel. They sent 300 of the slowest, most easy-to-hit rockets and dummy drones that they had in their arsenal. And then, as I was able to get more information on the attack, they had apparently warned that this was going to happen like 72 hours in advance. The rockets took hours to fly from Iran to Israel because these were all launched from Iran. So it's a first in that this is the first attack on Israel that Iran has conducted from Iranian soil. And I'm pretty sure that's sort of the point. You bombed our soil, so now we're going to attack you from our soil. And the symbolism of it is meaningful, considering how we got here. But this is, again, the most telegraphed, easy-to-stop, light-handed response that Iran could have done that would still be politically acceptable within Iran. Because, you know, the domestic politics also plays a part. And you have these insane people who are saying that this is the worst thing ever and Israel needs to reestablish deterrence because we can't let Iran get away with this. Get away with what? Get away with what? Not actually bombing you? Not actually oversaturating your air defenses? Taking a political W at home while militarily actually taking an L? Taking an L militarily, well, it's a symbolic L more than anything else. It's not that they couldn't do worse. They can. And everyone knows that they can do worse. And if they wanted to, they would have done worse. And everyone knows that. So they went as the absolute minimum. They went as hard as they needed to at the absolute minimum for it to be politically acceptable inside of Iran. But it was so light-handed that Israel was able to just slap it away and go on about its business. Both sides can claim victory. Iran fired 300 rockets and drones at Israel, and they can say, we did that. We made them deplete all these, their billions of dollars worth of air defense missiles to fight these rockets off. We made them weaker militarily, and we got them back for the bombing of our embassy. All right, that's a win for Iran at home. It's a very small win, but it's one that they can take, and they're trying to take the win. Israel, who shot down 300 rockets and drones, doesn't want to take the W, because it's a win for both sides here. Both sides can take this and legitimately claim a victory, especially the Israelis, because they shot down 300 rockets and drones. And they can now de-escalate with Iran. But you have these fake friends, these Israel whisperers, who love Israel so much that they want Israel to turn down the opportunity to not have a war with Iran, turn down the opportunity to focus, to go back to focusing solely on Gaza, which, we're supposedly supposed to believe that Israel is destroying Hamas. Well, focus on the task at hand. That's your objective in this war, not a war with Iran. Focus on the task at hand, if that's what you're actually doing. All these Israel whisperers want Israel to sacrifice an opportunity to not have a war, which would distract them from what they're actually trying to achieve in Gaza. A war that they can't win, mind you. It's insane to me. It's insane. And they all know, and they all like to fearmonger about, if Iran comes into the war, that means war with Hezbollah, that means war with the Houthis and all these, and the Axis of Resistance. It's like, okay, well, why would you want to instigate a war with Israel and Iran then? If you know that that's going to be a consequence of them being at war with Iran, why would you do that? Fake friends. Israel. Is my Israeli brothers. Do not listen to these fake friends, all right? Don't listen to they're going to get you killed. They think that they are the moral superiors. They think that they have the high ground. They think that they're so smart. If you listen to them, you will die. And that's not an exaggeration. Your country will die listening to these people. And I beg of you, don't listen to people in your own country who espouse these same ideas. It doesn't matter where the ideas come from, it's going to get you the same result. You might not exist as a nation listening to ideas like this. Take the W and walk away. Take the W and walk away. And when you get the chance, do it with the Palestinians. Take the W and walk away. And do it on your own terms. Because if you don't do it on your own terms, you're going to be doing it on the terms of the United Nations. You're going to be doing it on the terms of the Arab states. And those terms, you're going to choke on them. You're going to choke on those terms. No one's going to want them, but you're not going to have a choice. That's what happens when you're a defeated power. Do not let these people talk you off the cliff into becoming a defeated power when you still have the opportunity, the option, to walk away from this as a victor and claim a legitimate victory. Both sides are in a position where they can claim a victory, which means that both sides are in the opportune position for de-escalation. Do not listen to these fools who want you to continue the path of escalation into a war, a hot war with Iran. When you can see that the Iranians, if they want to, can oversaturate your air defenses by just firing off hundreds of rockets at you. You saw Hezbollah fire rockets at you before this attack. Do you really want to be fighting both of them at the same time? That's not a winning strategy. It's just not. Don't do this to yourselves. This is my plea. This is my plea to you. Don't do this to yourselves. Don't let these idiots talk you off the cliff. It's like you're trying to commit suicide. You're on the top of a building, and these people who are supposed to be your friends are asking you to walk off. Jump, they say. No, don't jump. Walk off of the ledge. That's what you should do. Walk off of the ledge. Take it from me. I'm a professional in not killing myself. But that's my plea to you, all right? That's my plea to you.